So, I'd like to begin by expressing appreciation for your practice. It's not always easy being on retreat, and especially kind of at the beginning, there's quite a lot of settling in to the form, to being here, to getting used to the environment, and just really wanting to express appreciation for the willingness and dedication of showing up to the practice, showing up to being here. And I also wanted to invite you to just maybe check in for a moment and feel how you are. How are you? How are you in this moment? Without trying too hard to figure out, just meeting with your body, heart, and mind as they are appearing in this moment. Just meeting, breathing, allowing, settling with what is here. Noticing how that is. And in many ways, that's what we've been doing today, and that's generally our practice. Our practice is meeting our experience. Our practice is meeting our experience in the best way that is possible for us, within the conditions of a particular moment. I'm going to say that again because I like that. Remembering that our practice is meeting experience in the best possible way within the conditions of this moment. That's it. It says on the schedule I'm going to speak until 8:15, but I could just stop there with that. But maybe we'll kind of unpack that a little bit more. Sometimes we joke that what we call the Dharma talk is actually the evening entertainment, and so we have to do our part and try and entertain. So let's look a little bit more at our experience. Let's look a little bit more at what makes a moment of experience. Any moment. When we say experience, when we say a moment of experience, is any moment where we're sensing the world through one of our senses, through the sight, the hearing, the touch, the smelling, the tasting, or the mind. So Buddha Dharma, the mind is a sense door. It's quite nice to think of it this way. So in any moment in which there's an experience, we're knowing something through our senses, there's something we're paying attention to, and there's a way that we're paying attention to it. The shorthand that we sometimes use is there's a what and a how of our attention. A what and a how of our attention. So kind of where is attention? What is attention directed towards? What is it noticing? Where is it placed? That's the what of attention. And the how is how are we relating? How attention, what's the attitude, what's the quality of our attention in that moment. So let's give an example because they're useful. So maybe kind of a few moments ago, the how of your attention, the what of your attention was the light in the room. We're all kind of perhaps paying attention. Is there enough light? Is there not enough light? Is it in the right direction? Can you see me? Can I see you? You know, that's where the attention was being directed. And that was maybe quite obvious to us. Attention goes to something. In that case, maybe intentionally. There's also the how of the attention, kind of the lens through which we're looking, the attitude or the quality that is there. So maybe there was interest, maybe there was irritation, maybe there was impatience, maybe there was patience. These are all ways of relating. And when those two come together, what we're paying attention to and how, we've got our experience. Yeah, they both shape and create what we're actually experiencing. So whether that moment or those moments when we're trying to get the lights right, yeah, whether they were boring, yeah, annoying, yeah, amusing, yeah, that was kind of how you may have experienced it. That is determined by this what and how of attention. Now, what we were paying attention to and how. Does that start to make sense? Yeah. Does it not make sense to anyone? Okay. This is really important. Yeah? Because this understanding, this is the wisdom, that's at the heart of the teachings and of their application. Noticing this, where the attention is going, what it's landing on, and the way that's coming through. And this understanding, this wisdom, and its application is what opens up possibilities of freedom for us. So these teachings, these practices, the teachings and practices of freedom, the teachings and practices of well-being. And when we start to understand and of the factors that shape our experience, possibilities open up. So in today's practice, you know, if we apply this kind of looking to how we were practicing today. So when we practice, you know, the what of attention is the anchor that we choose. Whether it's the breath or sounds or the body. We're kind of saying, okay, this is what I'm going to be paying attention to, or this is what I'm going to be coming back to. Rebringing our attention. And so, you know, it's, you know, part of what we're doing, what we're practicing, is we're choosing an anchor of attention that will be beneficial. So something that's relatively accessible for us. We're not going to go for an anchor that, you know, brings up anxiety, for example. You know, look for an anchor that supports grounding. I'm looking for a beneficial anchor, a what of attention that's relatively beneficial. And we're looking for one anchor of attention. So sometimes people say to us, oh, you give all these options. Yeah, so I'm kind of moving around between them during a practice. But we're kind of looking for this practice. Going to do this, breath or breath and body, now those two can go together, or sound, you know, a different one, so that we kind of start to train the heart and mind in this. And I mentioned this, I think, in the Q&A, in the capacity to place attention, to choose the what of attention, and to sustain attention with it. So that was the what we were working with today, and then the how, multiple levels, multiple layers of how. So Nathan was mentioning this gom, becoming familiar with the Tibetan for meditation. That's a how of attention. When I say, the practice is about meeting and getting familiar with. That's an attitude. As opposed to, a how of attention which says, nail your attention to the breath and keep it there. Yeah. That's a different how. Yeah? You can tell by the tone of my voice, right? That makes sense? Yeah. So the how of attention that we're using today was the gong, the meeting, the familiarizing. And also that, second idea that Nathan brought in this morning, the cultivation, yeah? The sense of we're cultivating something, we're developing something as we're practicing. That's also a how of attention because it shapes our practice. If I think, okay, I'm cultivating responsiveness, I'm cultivating an easing or a grounding, an acceptance, that becomes a how of attention. It shapes our experience differently to kind of the other extreme that we mentioned today of like, oh, I've just got to watch my breath for 45 minutes, every single breath. It's a different way of relating. It shapes experience differently. So easing, grounding, accepting, you know, that phrase that Nathan mentioned this morning, it's like this right now. You know, just like, it's like this right now. You know? It's another way of relating, another how of attention that we can bring. And as we're doing this, we're choosing an anchor of attention, for what to bring attention to, that's relatively accessible, that's relatively neutral. Not too exciting, but interesting enough. Yeah, we're choosing that how. We're choosing a what. Yeah. I keep mixing them up. Yeah. So a what of attention and a how of attention. That's also beneficial. Yeah. And through that, we're cultivating a gatheredness and a quietening and a bringing together of body, heart, and mind. And it may not feel like that in your experience right now. Yeah. But that is what is happening gradually. That is what is happening gradually and over time. And it may be helpful at the end, towards the end of this first day of practice, to just reflect and think, you know, of one moment, yeah, one mini moment, one tiny little moment when the sense of increased gatheredness was there. Or calming, or gathering, just remembering that. And as the kind of Buddha so beautifully used to say, you know, drop by drop, the water pot fills. Yeah. So just as we've been saying today, one moment at a time, and then one drop of gatheredness at a time. And something to appreciate and remember for ourselves and notice. So kind of why are we doing this kind of in practice? Why are we kind of choosing this anchor, trying to sustain attention with it? Why are we cultivating these hows of attention? And why is it hard? Because maybe it feels like, oh, it really makes sense, but it's not so easy to do. And it's because we're going against the stream of our habitual conditioning. Yeah? So our attention has tendencies. Yeah? Our attention is not just something that we put on or off. Yeah? It's something that is at play, and as such, through repetition, we've created particular habits. Not just us. A lot of these are universal human habits of attention that we've inherited. As human beings. So we have attentional tendencies. So our attention, kind of again, this was mentioned in the question and response today, our attention will go to particular things more than others. The what of attention, that's habits, will notice what's not quite right. We'll notice what's not okay. We'll notice what we don't like. That's not just you. This is the negativity bias. It impacts the human mind. A long-term inheritance from our hunter-gatherer ancestors that we've inherited. It's a very strong tendency of mind and of attention to go to that. And when we know This is a tendency of mind. Yeah. It doesn't mean this is real in the way it seems. Again, I touched on it this morning. I'll notice the areas in my body that are uncomfortable more than the areas that are comfortable or that are neutral. Yeah. And this is, it's good news to know that, because when we know that, we can think, oh yeah, this feels like it's the only thing going on in this body, but it's not. Yeah. This is just the habit of the mind to go there. So there's habitual habits of the mind, tendencies of attention to can be drawn to particular things, yeah, and not to other things. Yeah. And there's also particular patterns of the how of attention, yeah, kind of atmosphere of attention, the attitudes, the qualities that shape our attention. And in a nutshell, in shorthand, we can say these are patterns of reactivity, of pushing away that which we think is unpleasant, of trying to pull towards us that which we think is pleasant, and kind of a general kind of movement. Our minds move around a lot. Our attention moves around a lot. That movement, that's again, it's a pattern. It's a tendency. It's not personal to us. And through our practice, you know, several things are happening. There's several things that we're doing with our practice. Practice offers us more possibilities. Just the knowing this is a habit. That's a tendency. It's not even personal. Can you feel the freedom that offers? And suddenly, oh wow, there's more than this. Just that knowing. There's more possibilities, and there's always something that we can do to change what's arising in experience to some degree, even if it's a tiny little bit. A tiny bit goes a long way. As we experienced with the porridge this morning. Yeah, I was going to get it in there. It's probably going to star in the talk. It wasn't a large amount of salt. It goes a long way. And the, for some of us, at least, the kind of activation it caused in the heart and mind. Wow, that must have been interesting. A little bit goes a long way. And you know, so something that practice offers us, others, more possibilities. There's always something that we can do. And as we practice, we're actually developing flexibility of attention, flexibility of awareness, as opposed to just being pulled by the momentum of our habits, of the habits of mind. So we have this flexibility, we expand the possibilities and the range of what we can pay attention to and how. So I kind of go back to the porridge this morning, you know, and just my experience, and noticed it was salty. And then I thought, okay, so this feels unpleasant, but why? You know, it's this curiosity, like, why is this? And it's like, because I wasn't expecting it to be salty. Yeah. If it was soup, you know, and not porridge, I don't think it would have been a problem, that same amount of salt. So just seeing that, space, expanding the possibilities and range of what we pay attention to and how. And then, you know, can change, move the anchor from the saltiness to the fact that someone is preparing food for us. Wow, someone made this for us. Does it matter that it's salty? When we think about that, when we open to gratitude, we're changing the what, we're changing the how. We're bringing in curiosity as a how, interest as a how. Yeah? Shifting from the saltiness to the gift. Yeah? Does that make sense? And that changes the experience. That changes the experience, and this is important. Why? How does it change the experience? Reduces the dukkha, reduces the suffering, the ill-being in that moment. It actually opens up, you know, it becomes very pleasant. Yeah? Oh, someone made this for me. Yeah. It's saltier than I would like, but they made this for me. Ah, But this is kind of, you know, just an example, a small example of the kind of possibilities that open up for us, you know, to relate and to see our experience in more beneficial ways. That kind of lead to well-being rather than the opposite. So these 10 qualities or attitudes, the paramis, that we're kind of weaving this retreat around, yeah, they're the structure, the form that the teachings and the practices are woven around. These are all, yeah, beneficial house of attention, ways of relating to experience, we can say. And you know, Nathan gave this whole beautiful list of translations. I can't remember all of them, and I even forgot to ask him. So, I'll just name some of them that kind of really touched me. So I also like this this word perfections that is often used for them, because for me, like, I think about it as a verb. Yeah, like things that we can keep exploring and developing. And that sense of the completions, like as aspects that complete our experience, yeah, the wholeness. When Nathan was speaking yesterday, I was thinking about how they bring forth a wholeness to us. And they're onward leading. Yeah, there's like this sense with them that we can develop them more and more. Yeah, they're qualities that take us to the other shore, that support us to cross the flood of suffering. And they're limitless in the depth that they open and go to. And they're so practical at the same time. You know, they're so applicable at the same time. They're relevant to how we meet and how we respond to this moment. This moment. Right here. And the experience that's appearing right now. Right now. So I just want to name them again, just because, you know, I guess you hang around with the Buddha's teachings long enough, you start loving lists. The ones you probably go. So I really love that sense of these qualities, and I just want to name them again. You know, begin with dana, it's giving. And then sila, that sense of care, that intention of non-harming. Then we have renunciation, or letting go. Yeah, putting down that which is not helpful for us. Virya, energy, the enthusiasm, the vitality that can support us in our practice. Patience. Forbearance, beautiful, and such beautiful qualities. The honesty and the truthfulness of meeting our experience, you know, that willingness. It's like this right now. This is here. Perseverance, willingness to show up. What I was appreciating at the beginning of this talk, that willingness to show up again and again, to another moment, to another breath. Another manifestation of hearing, another aspect of our experience. Metta, goodwill, friendliness, kindness, and upekkha, equanimity, steadiness, stability. So these are all such beautiful, significant, liberating qualities. Kind of each on its own, we could take each of them and kind of practice with them for years, you know, just that cultivation. But also in their entirety as a whole, as a package, you know, as a kind of a group of kind of interdependent and mutually supportive qualities. And this, they can be so fruitful. And this is kind of part of why we actually decided to teach on them on this retreat. You know, in meeting our lives, including, you know, meeting the conditions of our lives, including those that are not necessarily easy or simple. In our practice and in our life, in our personal life, and in our shared reality as human beings living in this particular time. And so I want to explore more how particularly two of these today can support us, how they already support us, and how we can kind of bring them more into the limelight, and how they can support us in our practice on retreat, and with the knowing that the practices that we do here, the cultivations that we cultivate here, go way beyond retreat conditions for us. So I'd like to speak more of, and we're not going to go in the order of the ten. I'll say that again, but I am going to speak about sila, second of the paramis, and then metta, which just happens to be the second to last. Yeah. So kind of when we were planning this retreat, we kind of did this thing of like, you know, we each said what we'd like to speak about, and then we negotiated. Yeah. And metta and sila. And one way that we find really helpful to think of both of them is as aspects of care. I've used this word care a few times, but we can see both metta and sila. And sila is this care, this non-harming, and metta is this goodwill, kindness, friendliness, as aspects of care that are really foundational on the path of awakening, the path of freedom. And so metta, this kindliness, friendliness, the care and goodwill that guides us. Care and goodwill that guides us in the aspiration to alleviate suffering. Our own suffering and the suffering in the world. This is the foundation of our teaching. And this is kind of in the biggest aspirations and in the moment-to-moment ways that we attend to our experience, that sense of cultivating the intention of kindness, cultivating the intention of goodwill, and how we meet moment by moment. And sometimes we say, John Kabat-Zinn, we quote him, he says, mindfulness is kindfulness. And so in how we pay attention, metta is woven in. For this to be, you know, a fruitful practice has to come with that intention of metta. And how we pay attention, how we look at our experience. And then sila is that care, that benevolent care, not that wishes not to cause harm. Again, an intention. These are all intentions to deepen harmlessness, to give ourselves and others the gift of safety and of fearlessness. And sometimes I use this image, you know, I wish that we could kind of have a sign, you know, I practice sila, you know, safe zone, you know, that we could get the t-shirt. You know, this is a safe zone. And what does it mean for us when we recognize that about another? And it's not about t-shirts, of course. Something else that we pick up on when we feel a sense of safety. For many of us, it might be with nature. We haven't yet taken time to stand by one of the elders around here, these elder trees, you know, these great beings. What is it that we feel when we're in their presence? We feel that sense of goodwill, unconditional. We feel that sense of benevolence, of care, of that non-harming intention. And so, you know, sila and metta are really foundational. They're the basis of our practice and of this path. And when we speak about sila, you know, that includes the practice guidelines that we mentioned yesterday, if you remember or not. But it's much more broad than that. And that sense of that intention towards harmlessness, whatever that means for you, which is the positive aspect of that, that caring for ourselves and others. So sila and metta are both the foundations. Keep using this tree image. They're the roots of our path. But they're also the path itself. And they're also where we're heading. We are nourished by sila, by metta, as we practice, as we walk, as we explore and cultivate. But it's also where we're heading to. It's also the culmination, the goal, the fruit of this path of practice. So an awakened heart-mind is a heart-mind of metta. It's a heart-mind of unconditional goodwill and friendliness. Just like with the trees. You can feel that sometimes. And if you want a human embodiment, you could choose the Dalai Lama, for example. That has that kind of sense of that unconditional embodiment. So an awakened heart mind is a heart mind of metta. It has that goodwill and unconditional friendliness. And the way an awakened heart mind lives in the world is through and with that intention of non-harming. So it's also a heart mind of sila. That's kind of where our path is leading. It's the ground, the roots. It's the path that we walk, our practice, and it's also where we're heading to. And I don't know about you, but when I think of a heart mind that is imbued, that's filled with metta, and that deep sense of care that is sila, I can't think of anything that would that would feel better than that. So what does aligning with sila and metta, what does cultivating sila and metta, what does that look like on retreat? What does that look like in our practice? I want to kind of bring it down to this kind of immediacy of our experience. And also, what does it do? How does it impact our practice and our experience? So something we kind of started to drop in the guided practice today, I don't know if you noticed, kind of what happens when we see our practice as an act, as an embodiment of care, both in the sense of metta, of kindness, and of sila, and harmony. What happens when we start to see that in that way? And that's something we'll kind of be inviting you to do, but of course, you can also choose to do less or more of it as you wish. But it's kind of also seeing for yourself, exploring it. When we see our practice as an act of kindness, what happens? And, you know, we need to practice that sometimes, because our patterns of non-kindness can be pretty strong, often particularly towards ourselves. So we need to kind of practice that. Just keep dropping that in. Practice as an act of kindness. Practice as an embodiment of non-harming. Now that's the intention. And it's intention, it's not a measure. Now we say, I succeeded in that or I didn't. No, it's an intention. It lifts us up. It supports us, nourishes us as we practice in that way. So we can remember that as an intention, beginning of a session, and as often as is helpful for us. And we can also kind of in the moment, and again, we've already been practicing this, meet experience with that intention. Explore, what does that look like now? What does kindness, what does non-harming look like in this moment? when, fill in the dots, I've found that I was distracted again. Yeah. Or I thought about that again. Yeah. Or I forgot to be kind to myself again. Yeah. So whatever that arises, you know, what does it look like now to meet this with kindness? There's, you know, been again an example of that, you know, Nathan mentioned this morning. You know, what happens when we notice that we're distracted? Just change the syllables a bit. Instead of, oh no, we say, aha. Yeah? It's just a little shift. Yeah? And we can train ourselves to do that. And it makes a huge difference. Oh no, I got it wrong again. I failed again. Yeah? To, aha, look at this. Look at this. Yeah? There was a moment of distraction and now there's a moment of knowing that, of presence. So we're shifting in these ways, meeting with kindness, meeting with non-harming, even if it's just at the level of intention. So when we say meeting with kindness, it doesn't always have to feel warm and fuzzy. If it does, great, enjoy it. Yeah. But often it's just that intention that we bring forth. And as we bring forth that intention, it grows stronger over time. Yeah. Our habits, yeah, are there because we've repeated them, yeah, countless times. And other human beings have repeated them before us. So as we're changing our habits by repeating different things, wholesome things, through that repetition, that change will come. So that possibility, aha, rather than oh no. Or, you know, there's tiredness here, attending with the breath or with the hearing to that tiredness or to that agitation, whatever we find. And this tiredness, what happens if I breathe in ways that energize? Or if I stand up, yeah, as a way of energizing? Or if I open out to sounds, open the space, yeah, in a way that energizes? So we can have this responsiveness rather than the reactivity, rooted in kindness, rooted in non-harming. So some of, and maybe kind of you can start to hear it, and I just want to unpack it a little bit more, detail it a little bit more. You know, Sila and Metta emphasize particular attitudes in our practice. Yeah. Curiosity and interest, really important one. Yeah. Often when we speak about Metta in particular, we don't include interest and curiosity, but if we think of Metta as friendliness, yeah, isn't one of the most important aspects of friendliness and friendship interest? Yeah. I'm interested in you. Yeah. And so we're interested in our experience and qualities of curiosity, not a judgmental curiosity and interest, but a kind of open-hearted, yeah, curiosity and interest. Gentleness, another quality that comes forth, you know, with these attitudes of Sila and Metta. Acceptance. It's like this right now. It doesn't mean that we accept that it's going to be like this forever. Yeah? But right now it's like this, that gone, that familiarity, that meeting. Yeah? We need to know what it's like now so that we can respond. So a degree of wise acceptance. Sense of agency. I said at the beginning, there's always something we can do. And so Sila and Metta kind of with care remind us of that. There's always something we can do. Bring a little bit more intentional kindness to this moment. Bring a little bit more curiosity to this moment. And it might only shift a tiny little bit, but a tiny little bit is a lot. In a human heart mind. And Sila and Metta also remind us, you know, of possibilities. and remind us of possibilities, remind us that all of us, every living being, including yourself, deserves to be happy, is worthy of well-being and happiness, is worthy of being treated, met with respect and kindness. They remind us of that, of the worthiness and of the possibilities of what's possible for us as beings. So this gentleness, acceptance, curiosity, agency, something we can do, our worthiness and the possibilities that are there for us. And that possibility to ease, to ground, to energize, to open, to respond appropriately to what is unfolding in our experience. Yeah. To meet it again and again out of that goodwill, out of that care, and to attend. So as we attune through these intentions, intentional qualities of care, of goodwill, of friendship, of resonance, it's like this right now. Let's breathe with that. Let's soften with that. And then with metta and sila, we can let go of that which is not necessary, not helpful. The resistance, the reactivity, whatever form it's showing itself. And we can attune to what is beneficial in this moment, to what is spacious and expansive, to what enlivens and grounds. And we meet experience from there again and again and again. Moment by moment, one moment at a time. Sila and Metta remind us of that also. One moment at a time. At this moment. This moment. And this is where our life is right now. It's already gone. This one now. Yeah? It's here. This moment. And as we attend moment by moment, we're changing. Now we're transforming the habits of our heart and mind over time. Which is a noble and beautiful thing to do with the human life. To change these patterns from reactivity to response. And from limitation to possibilities. So in moments of beauty and in moments of difficulty, we can bring these intentions forth. We can bring these intentions of care and of kindness, of curiosity, of gentleness, to nourish and to support our practice, our being. And through our practice and this particular body, heart, mind that we each embody, and to nourish and support all beings. And sometimes just dropping in this kind of sense of, may we be safe. May we find ease. Sometimes weave that in as a way of reminding yourself. May I remember. I remember this moment and bring curiosity and kindness and care to it. So we're tuning, fine-tuning and kind of playing, just like we were doing with the lights at the beginning of this session, with that inner illumination of the heart and mind. We're playing with that, tuning the experience, shifting the experience, playing, exploring, getting to know our experience through this how of attending, through the way of looking. We're letting go, we're easing, we're stabilizing and grounding again and again. And as we do so, we're also gathering, collecting, soothing, calming the body, heart and mind again and again. And this is our practice. It's our practice for our own well-being and for the well-being of all that lives, all the living beings that share this precious earth with us. Practice that supports and enables the movement from suffering to freedom, from ill-being to well-being for all of us. Maybe the last thing I want to say is that it'd be really interesting to also notice that both metta and sila are deeply nourishing and deeply resourcing, and the more familiar we are with them, now the more we will notice that. They support the heart-mind to calm, to ground, to gather, and to collect. In the tradition, a lot is spoken of this, you know, particularly, you know, sila as freedom from regret. When we know that our intentions, this is really important, intentions rather than the results of our actions, when we know that our intentions have been wholesome, we can rest into that, and that supports a gathering and a collecting. Spoken of as the kind of gatheredness or the well-being of blamelessness. We know that our intention have been wholesome, and that freedom from regret. Doesn't mean we don't make mistakes. Doesn't mean that, you know, the results are always what we want them or intend them to be. But we can rest into that knowing. This intention of non-harming is here. And that was what was directing the thoughts, the speech, and the actions that came from it. And the well-being that comes with metta, that deep well-being, with that freedom from animosity. Metta, goodwill, friendliness, kindness, also spoken of in this very subtle and this non-ill will. Freedom from ill will, the freedom from animosity. And again, when I say that, I often feel like, wow, I would love to have a heart and mind that were free from animosity, that were free from ill will. But we can know moments of that, or a lessening of that. And that is the deepest form of well-being that is available to us. So both sila and metta, they offer us the gift of safety within us and between us. And with that gift of safety, the gathering, the resourcing, the collecting of the body, heart, and mind for the welfare and the benefit of all. Let's just have a quiet moment together to bring this to a close. So thank you for your listening and your attention. I appreciate your generosity in giving it to me. And we have half an hour for some walking practice in this magic of the evening. There's something beautiful about this time of day and precious. So enjoy the walking practice, and we'll be back in half an hour for our last practice of the day, which will include some chanting. Okay.